From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob. How's it? Oh, I can't say
you're
it.
You're doing it again, man.
Oh, hi there, Bob. No, I can't say that either. That's taken. Oh, hello there, Bob.
Greetings. Greetings there, Bob. Salutations, Bob.
Good to see you. People were kind of, on the radio side of things, if you're listening to the live episode of this right now, people were concerned because, like, where's Bob? Where's he at? We're waiting for Bob. I was like, Bob will be here soon enough. Just sit tight, relax. We'll get Bob here. And as promised, I delivered Bob Anderson in the house for another episode of Bob After Dark. How about that?
We're a little early for the live viewers because we said we were going to do 9:30 Central.
We're late for the radio crowd. We're early for the live viewers.
We're somewhere in the middle there. And then for the podcast viewers,
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. They're just listening to it whenever.
Yeah.
So that's always a plus.
So everybody's on a different schedule is what you're trying to say here,
everybody,
Bob.
Everybody is. Okay, let's get your weekend update, Count Panic.
Yes, the weekend update, Bob. Nothing too exciting, of course, happened this week. I know last weekend I told you about my whole golfing experience last weekend.
But
this weekend was pretty low-key as far as events going on, although that's every weekend here in 2020, pretty low-key on the events because really – there's no events happening, so we just kind of chug along the best we can and live our lives. But had a good weekend all in all. Nice weather, of course. We had that heat wave last week, and now we're cooling down a little bit here. It's still summer. All September 1st on the live episode here. Does that officially mean the kickoff to where the veil is at its thinnest?
No.
Not yet?
No.
Okay.
However, there are people in the metaphysical community that believe that 2020 is just one long veil thinning.
And that
all the energy that's going around and all the craziness is actually making the veil extremely thin.
You think that's it?
I am an expert.
Yeah, you are.
I guess you could say it's possible, right?
Yeah, that is very possible, of course. But, I didn't know if this was a time to say the veil is at its thinnest, of course. But a lot of people take September 1st as like the unofficial kickoff of, well, maybe the spooky season.
Listen.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
It was 80 degrees perking, like in Chicago today, and the Queen of the Night messages me and says, it's fall. No, it's really not fall. And then I was bombarded with gifts of cats laying in piles of leaves and, pumpkin pictures and stuff. And I said, it's going to be 80 degrees with high humidity because it's supposed to rain.
Here's the thing. We go through all these seasons, of course. A lot of people jump the gun. Even in August, they say, well, it's time to put up the Halloween decorations. I don't know.
Listen, when you live my life, right?
Yeah.
This is what you do for a living, and you're day in and day out, and you're doing the paranormal show all year round.
Mm-hmm.
Every day is Halloween when you're Bob Anderson. That's why people ask me, like, oh, what are you going to do for, like, Halloween, right? What do you do for your show? And I'm like, I don't know.
But I think people that enjoy, of course, Halloween when you have Christmas there, you kind of jump the gun on Christmas, of course. And people celebrate the Christmas season during the Halloween time. And I think people that enjoy the summer get mad at the Halloween crowd because they're jumping the gun on their summer.
Look, it's paranormal season all year
for
round.
You, but for I'm talking me. About for the citizens out there.
For the citizens out there, this is the Bob After Dark rule of thumb when it comes to Halloween time, right? And to kick off your fall traditions. If September 1st is under 75 degrees, then you can start celebrating fall.
Uh-huh.
All right? You follow me so far? That's the rule of thumb. Now, if September 1st is 80 degrees with high humidity, hold off. Don't go buy your pumpkin yet.
Don't put on the flannel just yet.
Not just yet, no. That's just my attire when I'm not doing this. It's flannel throughout the fall. When you have a string of more than 3 days in a row of under 75 degrees, then it's okay to bust out the cardigans and stuff because it's time for fall.
But sometimes they trick you, too, with that whole thing. Because I remember October, one Halloween, trick-or-treating, it was like in the 80s for that day. It was like unbelievable. Like it was like a heat wave that Halloween. So
I recall.
We get fooled sometimes with these days that feel like they're going into the cooler climate. Then they just kind of sucker punch you with a 90-degree day in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, so you ready for my weekend update?
How was your weekend?
Weekend was okay. Not so uneventful because, well, there's no such thing as uneventful. However, I did get to see Bill and Ted Face the Music. I watched that. I got to sit on my couch and rent it because it's 2020 and movie theaters are far and in between showing things. So.
Yeah, it's weird because they said it's out in theaters, but nothing around here.
No. It was a hike to get to the nearest one. So I said, you know what? I could watch it in the comfort of my own home. I could pop popcorn. You know, I could do the movie experience. As much as I'd like to support a movie theater right now, there was just nothing around. So I got to watch Bill and Ted, which kind of inspired this whole episode. Now we're not talking about time travel.
Maybe that is spooky.
Although time travel is paranormal. Yeah. It's not paranormal. It's science fiction-esque things. And I mean, it falls under the realm of what we talk about on the show.
Yeah.
So I did get to watch Bill and Ted, and then I... That's about it, to be honest with you. There wasn't a whole lot Lovecraft Country. Watched that. Its third episode was really good. Enjoyed that.
It's still going strong?
Absolutely. Okay. It hasn't slowed down really yet. If you're not watching Lovecraft Country, you're missing
people
out.
Like a second episode was a letdown or, you
no,
know.
No. Look, man, it's. I'm curious where they're going to go from here, to be honest with you. But I'm all about it. 1,000%. I support the. I support that. All right. So get on Lovecraft Country.
And right. Bill and Ted was
the movie
or no?
I don't really know how to describe it. Bill and Ted was a movie. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I don't know if I'm in love with it, but you know what? I love the franchise, and when I'm not Bob After Dark, I'm a movie guy. Yeah. I'm a movie guy, I'm a video game guy, right? I'm a nerd. So I we'll get to that. That'll be a Bob After Dark
But you enjoyed the third installment. For the most part.
For the most part, yeah, I did. That's for Bob After Dark in the movies, when me and you take over Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah.
We'll go review movies.
Yeah, we could do that. I'm sure they'll send us our way. All the hits, they come our way. So
the biggest of hits.
The biggest of hits.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. If this is your first time ever watching Bob After Dark or listening or whatever telepathic communication wives that you're picking up Bob After Dark, what is our show? We talk about everything, legends, lore, and supernatural. We cover some weird, spooky news stories of the week, and then we share your ghost stories as well. If this is your first time ever listening to us in podcast land and you're enjoying what you're hearing, I can't stress this enough. Go on over to the Apple Podcast website, Apple Podcast Bob After Dark, and make sure you leave a review. 5 stars is preferred. I'd really like you guys to leave a 5-star review because then that means me and Count Panic we get noticed a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that means that we're going to get to a bigger, broader audience, which means that we can start doing this full time.
5 stars.
We're getting close.
Better than 4 stars.
It's better than the 4 stars. So make sure you leave us a 5-star review. Count Panic will toast you live on air to a cup of water. But we don't have a 5-star review this week, Cal.
Oh, now put my cup down.
Put your cup down.
Shame
drink,
on you.
Though. Shame. Yeah. You should be leaving a 5-star review.
No toasting. Although we could drink. There's no toasting going on.
No, we could drink. But
No toasting.
No. It wouldn't be a Bob After Dark like thing if we didn't have like a beer or something. But
Yeah.
All right. Let's dive right in. So this is the part of the episode where you, the fans, send us in weird paranormal news stories. This can be anything like advances in science that are like borderline science fiction but happening in reality. Any kind of weird updates in the world that are, metaphysical, meeting like mainstream media. And, Count, we actually have a record,
yeah.
I think, that's going strong. We have a listener, Whitney. Whitney chimes in every week with news stories. She doesn't stop. This Whitney,
she's cranking them out.
Whitney is a machine when it comes to news stories. In fact, Whitney came and wrote me 3 news articles.
Three.
She gave me 3 news articles. So Whitney 100% steals
across the board.
Across the board. Steals the show this week.
All right. So you don't have to. I mean, that's like your research department now. You have
Whitney is. There's a combination. I have a few people that are on the research team at Bob After Dark, but Whitney is my like news article like. Bam, bam, bam. I just messaged Whitney just tonight. I'm looking through my notes, and I'm like, I don't have to have any notes for the news.
No, yeah.
Like, Whitney just charges and brings them right at me. So let's start with a news article that I didn't actually get to share last week.
Okay.
This is something that a lot of people shared with me, and that is, did you know that there is a asteroid that's supposedly supposed to hit the Earth on voting day?
Heard that. It was like the day of or the day before it was supposed to come, hailing towards Earth.
Yes.
So we would never know the result of the election because the meteor would take us out.
Okay. So from what I – obviously, there's a lot of people that got really excited about this because, you know, asteroid hitting Earth, it's like, well – don't have to worry about
2020s. I mean, already.
That's a best way. If I couldn't think of a better way of ending 2020,
I'd do it like that.
Asteroid. From what I've read though, that a lot of news people really hype that up a lot. It's going to be 6 feet, and they're saying it's going to burn up in the atmosphere before it even hits. If anything does, it'll be fragments. And with you know,
don't they say that with every meteor though? I mean, is there ever
there's going to be a chance that someday we're going to get the big one, and it'll be the end of you know.
How big is the big one?
I'm not an astrophysicist. Count panic. If we have somebody that's listening that's an astrophysicist, please chime in and let me know how big would an asteroid have to be or a meteor, whatever the proper term is. Mm-hmm. What is the size it has to be in order to actually destroy the world?
Yeah, because it's got to cover a lot of ground there. And like when they talk about the one you were talking about there that's supposed to come before Election Day, they're saying it's going to fizzle out. It's no more than the size of maybe a small table if it does hit. So really nothing to worry about here. But I guess one day we'll have something to worry about. But I always wondered how big of a meteor is considered big enough to wipe off the Earth. I don't know. We'll have to get them on the phone, though, to ask them.
Absolutely. Don't you have somebody at the Challenger Center available for those types of things?
You know what? Yeah, Lara Bates. I don't know if she's in the log tonight, but
Can you ask them? I'd really appreciate that.
I'll text her right now.
Yeah, just be like, how big does the asteroid have to be?
Yeah.
Because that's a good question. We'll also, quick update. The world hasn't ended from the TikToker community cursing the moon. We're in week number, like, 4.
So we're safe from that, too.
The moon still shines. We're almost at a full moon now, actually.
There you go.
All right, so let's dive right in. First news article comes to us from Newsbreak. And it is NASA selects concepts for future missions to examine the space environment. NASA has announced a selection of 5 medium-class Explorer concept missions that could one day revolutionize our understanding of the space environment. The proposals include efforts to collect imagery of the sun's poles and explore how the solar wind erupting from our parent star interacts with this Earth's protective magnetosphere and creative auroras.
Okay, I'm following that. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know anything I just said?
I was multitasking there, but I did hear what you said, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So basically, NASA's starting to set up more space missions. Apparently, the big SpaceX thing that happened a couple months ago was a big hit. People are interested in space travel again, and now they want to see how the sun technically interacts with the Earth. I mean, we know how it interacts, but we want to see it happening, and we want to see how it affects the Earth and how it affects our solar system, etc. I don't know if it's a man-sent mission. Probably not, but it's still a really cool thing. And I mean, especially with the way the world's going, where there's lots of, you know, global warming talks happening, and et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a very important thing to study, and I, for one, think we need to be getting on it.
Indeed, yeah, you gotta check out these things.
For you, the sun's a bad idea.
The sun is bad.
I
hiss at the sun when
you should probably avoid that. Cal Panic.
I should avoid it at all costs. I did pose the question to her, but she has yet to get back. People in the chats are chiming in, though. Yasmin said, bigger than the Earth itself, so possibly that be a big meteor there. Also, what did James say here? The size of Texas would shatter the planet. So a lot of people chiming in here about how big a meteor really has to be to make some significant damage. But hopefully she gets back to me within the show. So the
question still rages on. If not, just make sure you pin it so we can talk about it next week.
I'll pin it.
All right, next story comes to us from Fox News, and not what you're thinking. France horse killings stung countryside after barbaric slings with mysterious ritual-like mutilations. This is probably not the safest for kids, so if you got kids listening,
turn them away.
Cover the ears. A spat of gruesome killings of horses and ponies across pastures in France has left police baffled and rural communities terrified as the mysterious slings appear only to be growing. Up to 30 attacks have reported in pastures across the country since February, the most recent taking place on Thursday in the Seine-et-Loire region. Did you like that?
I did. You're practicing.
In east central France. All means are in the motion to end this terror. Agricultural Minister Julien Demonte tweeted Friday, and he actually says he visited the region on Friday, told France Info that authorities excluding nothing in the brutal attacks. Ears are cut off, eyes are removed, and the enemy is emptied of its blood, he said, describing the morbid fates befalling one of France's most beloved animals. In many of the attacks, an ear, usually the right one, has been cut off, recalling the Matador's trophy in a bull ring. No meat is taken from the carcasses, and some animals have some other parts of them cut away. This is absolutely barbaric, an official told the French news earlier this month after an attack in Combera village in the same region that the attacks are going on. The attacks have taken place all across the country in the mountainous rural region in the east to the Atlantic coast, many this summer, according to the Minister of Agriculture. Cow panic.
Yes.
We're going to cut that off there because it gets worse.
Okay.
We're going to cut that off. #panic steak.
That's for the after show, I guess.
When brutal.
No, that is, that's probably one of the most brutal news stories you had.
Absolutely. I'm curious what's going on there. You know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily think it's a metaphysical answer. I guess that would be the proper way of explaining it.
Yeah.
I hope it's not just some random human being that's doing this, because that's a lot of damage.
That is a lot of damage.
And it's a horrific to think about, you know? Yikes. With it being France, there's, you know, the old story of where werewolfism comes from in lycanthropy. It actually originates in France and, you know, some greater parts of France. So I'm curious if maybe there's a dog man running around in, you know, in that French region that's doing this. But the fact that they're taking the right ears, and that's kind of a Matador's way of, you know, bullfighting, which I am very much against. I don't know. That's bizarre, and it's actually pretty bad. So I hope if it's a human means, I hope they find them, and I hope it stops, because that's not good.
No, it's terrible. And I gotta mention this to throw it out here. Lara's gonna consult with her team. They're gonna do a special meteor meeting to try and like measure some things out. But we'll get some final results.
Tell her I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, viewer.
Yeah. Yeah, Laura Bates.
Laura?
There.
Thanks,
Laura Bates.
Laura Bates. Thanks,
Learning
Laura.
Center.
Appreciate you. Cow Panic, do we have a caller?
We do not.
Oh.
But we will continue on.
Absolutely. All right. The third news story comes to us from, again, Whitney. NASA finds an active Star Wars galaxy in deep space.
An active one?
An active one.
So they're like fighting with lightsabers up there.
NASA has found an active galaxy far, far away that looks eerily reminiscent of TIE Fighter from Star Wars. The galaxy known as TXS-0128 plus 554 is 500 million light years away from the constellation Cassiopeia. TX-1028 plus 554 is considered an active galaxy as it emits more light than all of its stars together. In 2015, researchers found, I'm not going to keep repeating it, but found this TIE system. And back then, it was just a faint source of gamma rays, but it wasn't until just recently that they were able to kind of piece together the light source to make what it looks like, an actual TIE fighter.
So if they... I mean, when you talk about this galaxy, if they kind of dig deeper into it, you think there are like Star Wars type, what you think the movie is living out on this galaxy here, maybe, possibly? Tell me there's a chance?
Yes.
There's like a Yoda out there walking around?
I'm sure, Count Panic.
Okay.
I'm sure. Did you want to be trained by a Yoda? Is that was that the plan?
Well, you see, Yoda's back all the rage now. Well, the baby Yoda is all the rage, yeah.
And unfortunately, I don't think you or I are cute enough to be the baby Yoda craze.
Well, who thought Yoda would be cute, and then they make him a baby, and then people go crazy over him. But that's very fascinating, Bob. So that's just the thing. We don't know really what's out there, but if you explore deep enough, you're soon to find something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Was that your hashtag?
That was my hashtag, my take, yeah.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
All right, so why don't we dive right in to our viewer's letter. This is where our one of our viewers were really nice enough to share a paranormal story. I have got quite a few of them still in backlog, so I promise if I haven't got to it yet, I promise you I will. So we're pretty set for a little bit, but please keep sending them in, and we'll get to how you guys can submit that here shortly. Let's dive right in. This letter comes to us from North Carolina, and an old friend, Jordan Voller, wrote in, and he actually had some chime in to wanted to share an experience he had with the same three experiences with the same ghost. You ready?
Yep.
Jordan writes, "So I've had three separate experiences with the same ghost. It was my friend's grandfather, James. James passed away in the house, specifically in the laundry room, which is connected to the back garage entrance. My friend's grandmother, who still lived there, used to use the back door for easier access so she could barricade the others since she lived alone. One night, we were hanging out with about 5 or 10 of us, and I went to the kitchen to get something to drink. Kitchen is attached to the garage. Basically, you come in through the first door from the outside, and you're in the garage / laundry room. Then take a left, and you're through that door, you're in the kitchen." Listen, Jordan has that floor plan written out, by the way. "While looking through the fridge, I heard a cat meow towards the garage door. They have no pets. So when I turned and looked towards the door, he saw a full-bodied apparition just staring at him. Not threatening or malicious, just staring. Quick as I realized what I was seeing, it was gone. That was the first time. The second time, I was helping that same friend move out from his dorm room and put some things in the garage. He knows about the first incident and says we'll be quick and it'll be fine. As we were bringing in boxes of whatever it was, the garage phone rings, begins to ring, but only once. It rings and goes silent. A couple seconds later, rings, then goes silent. I asked him if he wanted to try and answer to see whatever it was going on, but he just stared at me and told me we were done, which we basically were, so we left. After leaving, he informs me that the phone in the garage isn't hooked up. In fact, it's never worked his entire life." Okay. That's incident number two. The third and final time with James was sure the most amazing yet and insane thing I've ever witnessed. Me and another friend were at the house waiting on our buddy to shower so we can go grab some food. All of a sudden, the house phone begins to ring, just like the garage one. One ring, silence, over and over. Finally, I decided to try to interact and see if I was crazy or not. I said, "James, I'm a friend of your grandson's. We mean you no harm to your house or your family. But I had to make sure I'm not crazy. Can you make the phone ring just one more time?" The phone instantly rang on cue. Freaked out but still curious, I asked again, but this time I asked for 3 rings and 2 seconds apart. Lo and behold, bam! Instantly what I asked for happened.
Really?
Since that day, I've never been back to that house. However, if I do go back, I'll know James will always be with me.
Now, that's interesting there, Bob, because a lot of times, and you've been on plenty of investigations before, when you ask something to happen, politely, of course, "Hey,
Absolutely.
Can you make this phone ring? Can you move this structure here or make the light turn on and off?"
Yeah.
A lot of times it's just waiting around. They don't answer right away. With this case, though,
Jordan had it right away.
Yeah.
I've had instances in, you know, investigations and, you know, just various paranormal experiences or experiments that I've used and I've done I've had quick responses. I've had them where I've had zero experiences after I've called them out, you know, not called them out, but like, "Hey, can you, you know, if you're here, can you give me a sign?" I've had other ones where it took a bit, but something happened, and I don't know if you can link it back to it. But Jordan's story is so lively and so with it and so there. It's really amazing.
Now, I know Bill said answered. Did he answer the phone?
Or? He didn't write it. I'll have to write Jordan and ask him if he I'll have to write back and ask if he answered.
I mean, would you answer that phone?
Panic.
I know, but just to, you don't know what's on the other line, Bob.
You know I'm going to answer.
Well, I know you're going to answer.
I'm going to answer that phone regardless, because let me tell you, phone ringing with nobody answering it drives me nuts. Big pet peeve of mine. So yeah, I'm going to answer that phone, especially if I think there's something ghostly on the other side.
I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that he posed the question, and then so quickly it happened. And this was after he saw the apparition, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the apparition came first. The second was that garage phone. And, you know, I like to try to come up with ideas, and I try to, you know, I'm not one of the believers that just goes straight into obvious, like, obviously it's a ghost, right? I'm a scientist at heart, so I have to try to roll things out. I have to, you know, I have to go in. There's times when I get really excited and I want it to be a thing, but you have to roll out the obvious, right? And you have to sometimes try to debunk these situations. The fact that a garage phone rang and it's never worked, that's insane. Mm-hmm. And I've heard stories like that before where there might be a paranormal experience, a ghost, whatever it might be, right? And I've heard of these things able to actually interact with, you know, equipment when it's not turned on. I've heard stories about people have radios going off when they're not plugged in. So you got to think that a spirit is just an energy source. So it's very possible that it made this phone ring. Obviously, James, in this case, the ghost, wants to interact with Jordan really bad. Jordan, next time you go there, I would definitely say that you should probably check that out and figure out what's going on. Pick that phone up.
Well, it's interesting too, because, you know, if I bring up payphones, you know what a payphone is, Bob, right? Payphone, I know you're a young guy, but there used to be, for the younger viewers out there, payphones, of course, on the street. And sometimes you would be by a payphone, it would just start ringing. And you would wonder, well, who's trying to call from a payphone? And even then, you realize it may not be paranormal that this phone is just ringing out of nowhere.
No, but the phone's not hooked up.
Well, not the phone, but I'm just saying in general, like, to answer the phone, like, with this case here, to even answer that phone, not knowing who's on the other line, especially then when it's not hooked up. I mean, would anything even say anything back, or it'd just be dead silence? Dead silence.
I don't know. I don't know. I've heard of situations where people get phone calls too from deceased loved ones, or ghostly, you know, voices reaching out to somebody from another end of the phone. I mean, I've heard stories like that, and they're actually very fascinating. You know, you wonder if there's some sort of communication, like some sort of ghost communication ability that they have, where they're able to talk to somebody through the phone. I've had stories where people have gotten phone calls from someone right when they died. And that's always been like a fascinating topic of discussion or a fascinating thing. That's a really good question. Count Panic is on the phone right now, I think taking a phone call from a fan. So I'm just curious where what his take on it. Maybe a ghost is actually calling our studio right now as we speak.
It was a spooky ghost, I think, on the line, but thank you for calling. I just want to update me with some things. Although I got Laura, she updated me as well.
Oh, let's get Laura's update.
Update here about scientists estimate that the asteroid would have to be about 60 miles wide to completely wipe out life on planet Earth. So 60 miles wide.
So what happens at 59? Does it eliminate just most of the, like, 99%? Laura, I really appreciate you sitting down and figuring out what that is for us. Laura from the Challenger Center. It's basically the closest thing we have to an astronaut on Earth. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, it's something you could learn a few things about space.
So thank you so much for chiming in on that, Laura. I appreciate your answer. But I'm fascinated by the topic of like a ghostly phone call. Mm-hmm. There's a famous story I read several years ago. Maybe it's not famous, but somebody's grandmother was on their deathbed, and he was several states away, and he couldn't make it for it. And he said he got a phone call, and it was straight static. And he heard the woman's voice say, "I'm okay, I love you." And then the next thing he knew, he got a phone call from, like, his parents, maybe. or whoever the person was, they had a phone call from their parents saying, oh, you know, grandma died.
Yeah.
He's like, I just talked to her on the phone.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you didn't. She's been dead for an hour.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's
those phone calls do. I mean, there's a lot of stories like that where the phone ring and the person has since passed away. That's some interesting stuff there, Bob, though. I don't know. It is spooky, but yet, I mean.
Do you buy into it?
Yeah, I would buy into it. I mean, there's a lot of stories like this. I mean, these stories about, well, that story. Now, maybe not the story about the phone ringing where it's,
sure,
you ask it to ring and it's not hooked up to anything, but the whole thing where the person has moved on and their cell phone, their number calls your cell phone, too.
Ooh.
I think a lot of people get spooked out by
ooh,
that.
Oh, man, if I saw a number from someone who passed calling me, I'd probably have a quick moment. I mean, nothing surprises me these days, but man, I'd have a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know James chimed in here and he's got a point. Maybe the payphone thing is why folks our age have social anxiety about answering our cell phones. We don't answer weird numbers, Bob. I don't answer weird numbers for sure. Even numbers I do know, I feel like I don't answer too often, but except
you answer my,
I answer when you call, Bob.
You answer when I call.
Yeah,
I'm not a texter.
You're not a texter.
I'm a caller. I'll call you.
You're rare. You're
a
very rare guy.
A
lot of people prefer to text.
No, I want to hear your voice. Yeah. I want to hear what you got to say to
me. Well, it's a matter when you got to take care of things in a snappy pace. You got to use the phone call there. But like numbers that you don't know, they call you. Are you answering those phone calls?
Kind of. Oh, let's make a pack real quick. I want to make a pack with you.
Yeah.
Okay? Let's say I go before you.
Okay.
If I call, you got to pick up the phone.
I'll pick up the phone.
I'll tell you something. Be like, panic. There's no cheese in the afterlife.
Then I'll just, I guess I'll stay here on Earth until... they do get cheese in the afterlife, but no, but like the whole phone numbers as far as these weird numbers that call. Sometimes do you get numbers? I think this is a scam, not something paranormal, but your own number calls you.
Yes, Count, that's called a scam.
That's a scam, not
that's
paranormal.
That's not paranormal.
So if I answer that phone call, I'm not going to be talking to myself on the other line. Is that going to happen or no?
No.
Because that's spooky too.
I mean, I guess it is.
Hey, Tony, it's me, Tony.
This is me from the future. Yeah. I'm just letting you know that, you know. Don't forget to wind your watch. It's a Bill and Ted reference.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. There, so you drop it.
There's also like those off topic real fast, but there's the prank calling types of folk that do the that see it on YouTube and they'll be like, oh, number 666-666-666-666
yeah.
calls.
You don't want that either.
No, and they'll tell me they'll be like, oh, Lucifer called me, and it'll be, you know, nothing spooky. It's just someone who, you know, does anything.
Yeah.
We have a caller?
Yeah, we got John on the line here. John.
Ah, John's my weekly visitor. Hello, John.
How you doing there, Bob?
Doing good, John. What's on your mind?
Is it okay if I say how you doing?
There you go.
Absolutely.
Would I get a patent on that? Or?
I mean, you can. The oh hey there, even like, I don't know if you're watching the stream, John, or listening on the radio, but I even have a cup one of the fans Becky sent me. It's one of those plastic, water cups. And even on the back, after the Bob After Dark thing, it even says oh hey there. That's like, that's my thing.
Well, I'm just checking, you know. You got hey there, Count's got hello there, hi there. You know, I just want to make sure I'm doing the right thing.
You're fine. What's on your mind tonight, John?
Yeah, that new branch of the military, the Space Force, are you familiar with it?
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty familiar. That's the Starship Troopers come to life.
Yeah, what is your opinion on that?
That's a great question, John. I really, I normally don't like to leave you hanging. I don't really have an opinion on it. If we, if there's, you know, an actual, like, I'm going to use Starship Troopers as an example again because it's one of my favorite movies, and, you know, you got to think about the alien attack. If there's like a vicious alien attack, like something where, you know, Mars attacks or something like that, where we're going to be in straight, you know, invasion mode, probably not a bad thing to have. With us not having that sort of a thing, maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. I don't really
would they
have
be able to fight the asteroid, you think?
I guess if they're weaponizing space, I guess they're the lasers or, you know, some sort of missiles or something, I guess. I mean, they'd be the ones to help, eliminate the asteroid.
Wasn't it basically set up so the United States had domain of the territory in space? Send somebody to Mars, I mean, but see, I don't get it. If we send somebody to Mars, that means Russia can't send anybody to Mars.
I think we fight the Russians on Mars is what they're trying to.
That sounds like a sci-fi movie, Count. I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, if somebody were to go to the moon now, they would, you know, see the lunar landing site. I mean, technically, we landed it, so I mean, we have a flag there. But I don't know if that considers us. I don't think it's us having the moon, you know.
Maybe the count could text Laura Bates there again.
I'll have to ask Laura. Yeah, can we can we fight the Russians on the moon if need be? But...
Yeah. See, you know. The poor girl ain't going to be able to go to sleep tonight. I mean,
No. We got a lot of space-related questions there, but.
All right. Nice talking to you, Bob.
All right, John. Thank you so much for calling in.
Take care.
Well, that's valid. I mean, if that meteor is coming, our best defense is to get a bunch of lasers on that bad boy, right?
Absolutely.
Although that might, well, I think that could only help the cause. If you break it up into little pieces, then it might not be, of course, it won't be as damaging, but still, they got to land somewhere, but hopefully in the lake or something like that where we won't be affected by it. More on that to come.
All right, folks, do you want to be like Whitney and share some news articles that come to mind and gets you excited to hear or gets you excited to see and you want us to talk about it? Or perhaps you have a paranormal experience that you want to share with us, whether it's a ghost sighting or a cryptid sighting or a UFO encounter, whatever it might be, I'd like to hear it. So one of the fans asked me recently if they can share their sleep paralysis stories with me. Absolutely. Yeah. I, you know, there's something to the whole sleep paralysis thing that we don't understand yet. So maybe there's a paranormal tie to the whole sleep paralysis, you know, thing, right? A phenomenon.
Yep.
So yeah, absolutely. If you have a sleep paralysis story or anything of the sorts, I'd like to hear it.
How about a sleepwalking story?
I don't think that you'll remember it, but I mean, if you got a good sleepwalking story, well, sure.
One time I got a ham sandwich from sleepwalking. That's my, not really paranormal, but still a good story nonetheless. Sleepwalking. Have you ever sleepwalked?
I haven't, no.
Huh. Well, how would you know?
I don't know.
Someone would have to
actually,
tell you.
Know what? I have. I'm sure I have. And if my parents are listening right now, I'm sure they
Isn't
have
that kind of a spooky thing, though, too? I mean,
It's horrifying. Yeah. Have you ever been around somebody that slept walk? Because I certainly have.
You're terrified, right?
It's like or somebody that talks in their sleep and they say really cryptic things.
Oh, no.
Well, oh, man, that's the worst. Yeah. But anyway, if you have a story to share, I'd like to hear it. So you can either reach out to us, bob@bobafterdark.com. You could reach us on Facebook or Instagram @bobafterdark.
There you go. So even I could reach out to you that way.
No, you could reach out to me. You have my personal phone number.
I do. I'll text you.
You could text me whenever you want.
Or I'll call you. You're not a texter.
You can call. You can text. Whatever you prefer.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Leave you a voicemail.
I'll answer.
All right. Perfect.
We have a Bob After Dark hotline number. We gotta get that going again because that's a good way to reach us too. So we do have a hotline.
Count Dracula was a big fan of the hotline.
Remember, Count Dracula pranked us like twice.
I wonder what happened to Count Dracula.
I don't know. Well, you know, I think the number's still saved on the Google Voice thing for our hotline. So I'll reach out and see if Count Dracula's still kicking around. But this guy called us like literally every week during October and gave us some sort of like
spooky,
some vampire puns, and it wasn't you.
No, maybe he'll be back this October.
Maybe he will. Yeah. I'll re-put out the phone number. Maybe Count Dracula will reach back out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, folks, for our live viewers at home, why don't you guys sit around, take a little break? For the podcast listeners at home, here are some words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
This is Mike.
This is Jacob.
And this is Matt.
We are Moth Boys,
a podcast on cryptids, conspiracies, and the unknown.
Unknown.
You can catch us every other Monday on, actually, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you.
And we're back.
Hmm.
Hi, Count.
How's it going there, Bob?
Doing good. What'd you do during break?
Took a little nap, but back and refreshed better than ever. Good to be back on the second half of Bob After Dark.
You know, I was actually, you know what I did during break?
What'd you do?
I wanted to dig a hole.
You dug a hole?
I dug a hole, yeah.
Where?
Just straight down.
What'd you find?
Dirt.
That was it?
That was it. Just dug a hole.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, some say if you go far enough, you'll end up on the opposite side of the world. So China, right?
Yeah, that's the running pun.
Yeah.
I guess in theory, if you went from one end of the sphere to the other, if you believe in, you know, the Earth is a sphere, which I do, I'm not one of the, I'm not a member of the Flat Earth Society, but yeah.
Well, you
good for them though. I mean, I appreciate people that put research into things. I'm not, you know, like there's the other folk that like believe in the hollow Earth thing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I appreciate their research. I, you know, can appreciate where they're coming from. I don't necessarily buy into it, but it's really interesting to read up on.
Wouldn't we, if we hit the middle, don't we hit the, I missed, oh, the science, would, what's the would, science term for it?
The molten,
the core.
Yeah, the core. We would melt. You, yeah. Maybe, I don't know, would you survive?
My cape protects me from all that, so we're good.
You're a vampire, not Superman.
No, but this cape could stand radiation at like a million degrees or something.
A million degrees, yeah, or something. Yeah. Did you just make that number
around
up?
There, a million degrees.
All right, Count Panic.
Yeah.
When I'm not a paranormal investigator, when I'm not doing a paranormal show or any kind of spooky thing like that, I am a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you could pick that up by the vibe you see.
Not at all.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I'm a big movie guy. I love watching movies, video games, etc. And one of my favorite franchises in the entire world is Bill and Ted.
Really?
I love it. It's Doctor Who, but, you know, like American and very... you know, borderline stoner comedy.
Yeah,
like that, you know, it's got those vibes. Uh-huh. And, you know, the humor is really clever. It's, you know, the plot's ridiculous, but it's good. It's good stuff. I really enjoy it. And my favorite character in the entire Bill and Ted mythos is Death, the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
Yes. I love Death from the Bill and Ted films, the Grim Reaper. He's hilarious. He's such a dork. And I was really excited when I heard that he's coming back for the third film, right? And he had a smaller role. It wasn't a big role, but he had a role. And it was a lot of fun seeing him interact with Bill and Ted again. And I got to thinking for the topic this week, I'm like, you know what? Growing up, you see this, you know, this image of this death, right? As personified, as a skeleton, whatever. Where does that come from?
True.
Where do we draw inspiration from that?
It's the skeleton, or if you don't see the face, it's just the hooded figure, the black hood. You can't see the face.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, you're right. Where does that figure come from, Bob?
Well, we're going to find out, because this week on Bob After Dark, for the lore of the week, we're talking about death.
As portrayed by
whoever.
Whoever, yeah. This is a lot of variations.
This is the Grim Reaper we're talking about this week. And I wanted to start this week off with probably one of my favorite quotes in all of cinema history. This goes beyond a lot of movies. Not my favorite, but it's up there. It's, whether you're a king or a little street sweeper, sooner or later, you will dance with the Reaper.
That's what you end the show with.
Yeah.
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 But you didn't make that up yourself.
No, that's Death says that in Bill and Ted too.
People might be confused by that.
Yes, and then he says, "Get down with your bad self."
Yeah.
It's that always struck a chord with me, because it's the truth, right? Death doesn't discriminate. Death's coming for everybody. Maybe not you.
No,
not yet.
We have a deal.
You have a deal.
Yeah,
but for the most part, death doesn't discriminate. You know, it comes after everybody. And again, whether you're king or even just a street sweeper, you'll get visited someday.
Yep.
And why do we do this topic? Why am I doing this outside of the Bill and Ted thing? I think the reason why I really enjoy the concept of the Grim Reaper or death being in fiction and something that we see being personified is because it's the biggest unknown. It's scary. It's kind of, you know, it's something that a lot of people fear. I necessarily don't fear death, you know, doing what I do.
Don't fear the Reaper.
No, I don't. Thank you. I was waiting for that reference to come up. I didn't want to be that
didn't
guy.
Take a long time for
didn't
that.
Didn't take
happen.
That long time. But I really like the... I really like it because it's something that we can kind of make fun of. You know, it's something that we could kind of, you know, personify. It's like making death your friend, right?
Yeah.
And any way you look at it, a lot of times when you have death in, you know, popular fiction, we have things like, you know, death from the Sandman comics in the DC universe or the Vertigo universe. And she's real sisterly. She was really caring. She, you know, she took her job pretty serious, but she, you know, cared about the people she reaped. You know, in The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, it was a cartoon.
Very humorous.
Grim was the butt end of the joke, just like Death is in Bill and Ted. There's the film Death Takes a Holiday, where the kids make Death sit up in the tree.
Yeah.
And that movie's actually brilliant, by the way, if you get a chance to see it. It's really old, but it really holds up. The kids make Death stay up in a tree, and it's like, oh, you stay there. And it's, you know, that one was a bit more... of a grandfather character. It was trying to teach, you know, these kids a lesson that death is a very important thing. And, you know, I like how people can take that concept and really, like, morph it into what they want, into their own kind of entity. And it's just fun. It's really cool to see people being able to kind of create something from the biggest unknown ever.
Yeah.
You know, I first I want to talk a little bit about the typical imagery of what the Grim Reaper is. The version I think that everybody comes to mind when I say death or the Grim Reaper, specifically the Grim Reaper, usually a skeleton, black robes, and holds a giant scythe. If you don't know what a scythe is, it's what the Grim Reaper holds. It's the stick with the blade.
Of course, you don't see him with anything else besides that.
No, the idea of this scythe is that it's kind of a, you know, it's the idea that we as humans or we as life are just but, you know, crops. And as the time goes for the crops to grow and, you know, fade away, it's you have to go reap those crops with a scythe. So the idea of death holding a scythe is, you know, basically comparing us to plant life. And that's where that characteristic comes from. The modern or classical look of the Grim Reaper actually comes from the 14th century. Back then, they were dealing with a little thing called the Black Death. Are you familiar with the Black Death?
I have heard about that.
It was horrible. Yep. I mean, people died by, you know, the truckloads. It was, you know, there's the famous saying, bring out your dead, right? And they had the carts they'd push around, and they'd have people come out, and they would bring out their dead bodies. And people that were surviving the Black Death were actually very much scared of what was the next day to come. You know, that wiped out a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of people that died from that. And so the people that survived had to have some kind of they wanted to create something. They wanted to create an image for what was going on around them. So there's these posters, if you go online and look, and I can post a couple to the Facebook page for you guys to see. There's these old drawings and comic strips and, you know, print ads of death just going around and just with the scythe just reaping people left and right during that time frame. And that's where the idea of the Grim Reaper really came from. There are things that predate it. But the idea of death as we know it today actually dates back to the 14th century. The reason why they picked that kind of concept, there's several different variations to what the Grim Reaper looks like. But the traditional sense, you got to think the skeleton is the symbol of death.
Yeah.
Black robes were worn by religious figures. Death is very much a spiritual entity. Doesn't, you know, not necessarily linked to one religion or another, but it's a, you know, you wear the black robes. It's a very important, you know, thing to wear.
He's rarely seen outside of wearing a black robe. He doesn't have like a collection of colorful robes.
We'll get to later.
Oh, really?
We'll get to that later. And that's actually a she, but we're going to get to that a little later. Yep. And then obviously the scythe too.
Yep.
Reap us like crops are. And there's actually a very, beautiful kind of, you know, there's like a beauty to it, right? Death it's a beginning. It's not necessarily the end. The idea of the skeleton moving souls is not a new characteristic, by the way. In Greek mythology, we know the ferryman who would actually take bits of copper or silver, depending on what part of the world you're in. You would pay the ferryman to get you over the river of Styx into the next life. That character was named Chiron, and he was the ferryman that would take you from, you know, point A to point B. So the idea of death personified could actually date back to the Greek mythology days with the ferryman. We have a caller on the line, so so that was the character that would get the people across the River of Styx. Also, one of the originations for the concept of death may actually originate back in the Bible. Revelations 6:1-8 was the idea of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. However, there is no there is actual no written word of, you know, death would came out as a skeleton wearing black robes. The actual line in it is, come, and I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and its rider's name was Death, and Hades followed. If you see that scene ever depicted in, you know, stained glass at churches or whatever, we always have the same depiction of, you know, kind of the skeleton riding the horse. But in the Bible itself and in the book of Revelations, we just have those words, and people built their personification off of it. It might actually come from different paganistic rituals from where death comes from or what it might be, and they might have just kind of morphed those characteristics from the creature to the, you know, the being. Might come back from Chiron and whatnot. Charon.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, it's, I was just talking to somebody on the phone there about experiences with death and whatnot, but you know, that still takes me back though to like, so basically they would just want to put a something to explain it all. So death was basically created just as the, for some of people to could look at it and be like, oh, this is what's going on here. And putting an image to what was happening, the madness that was going around, the death essentially.
Absolutely. You're back, by the way. You had to take a call.
I am back. Yeah.
Excellent. You've been taking a lot of calls tonight.
Yeah, people are chiming in.
Good to
me.
And just to you, not to me. All right. I just have some other characters in throughout the world that were also personifications of death that aren't necessarily black hooded creatures, skeleton wearing a scythe. And the Greeks had Thanatos, a not-so-scary entity, usually shown as a young man with wings and a sword.
Okay.
And Thanatos was the god of death in Greek mythology.
All right. Yeah, I think I took a Greek mythology class back in the day. I think we learned about some of that. But usually when people think about the grim side of Greek mythology, they think Hades, right?
No, Thanatos wasn't. You have to understand, the ancient Greeks didn't fear death. You know, they pretty much had it down to a science. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's going to die, and you're going to end up, you know, your soul's going to Hades, and, you know, that's just the end of you, right? So they didn't fear it. I don't know exactly when people started fearing death, but back then people didn't. And that's why Thanatos, as the death god, was very much a, you know, he wasn't scary. It wasn't necessarily like a, you know, big dude, you know, et cetera, et cetera. He's just a normal guy. He was a young kid.
Yeah.
That's how he personified.
Not as menacing as a tall figure with a hood over it, possibly a skeleton walking around. So much more terrifying.
In some of the old French regions of Europe, which wasn't France back then, the Celtic people and the paganistic people in that realm of people had Anku, A-N-K-U. Anku is very similar to our version of death, but also had two personifications. One, when you see pictures of Anku now, by the way, Anku is spelled A-N-K-O-U. Mm-hmm. Anku is literally just a skeleton, no robes, scythe. There is, however, another imagery of Anku that I find very fascinating, and it dates to an episode I just did recently, previous to your return, when I was back in the studio. One of the imagery for Anku was actually a shadow of a man wearing a hat, a wide-brimmed hat.
Okay.
Does that sound familiar to you guys? And he comes around reaping people in a cart, pulling him with four white horses, back to the white horse idea in death.
Now, why the white horse, once again?
It's just Book of Revelations, man. Okay. That's where they called, and his name was Death, and he rode a white horse. Just the way it is. But in this case, for Anku, he actually got pulled around in a cart by that, four of them.
That sounds much more luxurious than just one horse riding in. I mean,
Aku's actually a terrifying, like, entity. Hmm. If you look at the skeleton version of him, it's just the skeleton riding a cart.
Yeah.
But if you see the Shadow Man, it kind of looks like the man in the hat. So I'm wondering if there's a correlation between the man in the hat that we have now and that lurks in the shadows of people's bedrooms and the concept of, you know, Aku.
Quite possibly. When you say man in the hat, you mean the man in the hat you referred to in the past, not the Curious George.
Good
man.
Good job, Count Panic. I'm glad to see you research during the time off from the studio.
I did. I was listening in.
Death is typically depicted as a male, but not all over the world. Death does not discriminate, and that literally some cultures take very much, you know, they take that very literally. So in some personifications of death and in some places in the world, they actually depict death as a female. And in Poland, they actually have a female version of the Grim Reaper.
In Poland.
Smirek, that's S-M-I-E-R-C. She was depicted as a skeletal body, but very feminine in nature. Mm-hmm. And she actually wore a white robe.
Really?
Yes. So that's the Polish version.
And you said that quite well too. That sounded Polish there.
Thanks. Yeah. I'm sure my dad's somewhere being like, oh, you got that wrong.
I'm sure. No, it sounded right to me.
Probably the second most famous personification of death other than our version of the Grim Reaper is La Santa de Muerte.
Very good as well.
I'm Saint Death or the Beautiful Death. There's different variations of that. But she is the Latin American's version of the Grim Reaper and is one of the very few really shunned symbols of worship banned by the Catholic Church. So Santa Muerte is not an actual canonized saint. She was more of a folk saint, meaning these people out in Latin American countries and, you know, South American countries, etc., like that whole area south. These people created this entity that they believed would reap benefits. You know, she would come and, you know, if you worshipped her and you treated her well, then she would she protect you during life, but death was a, you know, she would be able to treat you well in death. To this day, they say there's something like 10 million people that actually worship Islam.
They made her a saint themselves.
Saint. That's not a canonized saint,
nope,
though. And in fact, the Catholic Church, like, is really against worshiping Santa Muerte. Like, they're very much against her.
They didn't put the stamp on it.
They didn't make the saint. So yeah, that's the idea. And, you know, obviously that goes to, you know, false idol worship. Yeah. But Santa Muerte is, her followers are considered a cult.
Mm.
Which, you know, take it or leave it. She is often depicted as a skeleton with bright colored dresses. And her followers make offerings to her. And they give things like cigarettes and candy and money, all to help with the odds of a good afterlife.
All great things. Cigarettes, candy, and money right there. How about that?
Again, as I was saying before, she was never canonized by the Catholic Church, but over the past 20 years, she has grown a following again of over 10 million followers. She may have actually originated from when the Europeans introduced the imagery of the Grim Reaper to their people. Some say that she's been around for a very long time. But you see, like, when you go out and, like, if you go to, like, Mexico and stuff, you may see a lot of imagery of a skeleton in beautiful dresses and whatnot. Those are, you know, those are, what's the word? I just lost it. I'm sorry. Those are shrines for Santa Muerte.
All right. But not condoned by
the Catholic Church. A lot of, she's really well depicted amongst, like, the crime circuit. A lot of criminals like to leave her, you know, offerings and stuff because they realize that their time's going to come too, so they wanted to actually have a a good chance and a good afterlife. So there's a lot of Santa Muerte worship amongst.
But she's bringing color to it as well. You mentioned the bright dresses there, not normally depicted.
You have to understand, like,
not normally, color is not normally depicted with death.
Well, you have to understand, though, people down there, death to them is, again, like, they treat death a lot different than we have here. death is a time of, you know, not celebration, but it's, you have to understand the stigma that we have as death, as people. It's not natural. We should accept it. We have to understand. I mean, obviously you want to prolong the experience. You don't want to
usually
die now.
Usually most people do, yeah.
Right, but, you know, death is inevitability, and in some cultures, people celebrate it. People celebrate not somebody dying. I don't want to make it sound like people are partying at someone
the
dying.
Life,
but
though,
you celebrate the life,
yes.
And then you have to understand that death isn't much of an end as it is the beginning to something else. That's why when you pull like the death card in tarot, which is another depiction of death with skeleton and black hood and scythe, you know, typically on a death card, death doesn't always necessarily mean you're going to die. It doesn't necessarily mean the end is coming soon. Death is just a door. I stole that from Ghostbusters 2, by the way. Yeah. Death is just a door. I'll be back. It's kind of a beautiful thing. And the culture down there, they really get it. In fact, they have a whole day dedicated to the celebration of death with, you know, November 1st. It's just it's a thing, and Santa Muerte really just kind of knocks that out of the park. And the idea of Santa Muerte, it's not necessarily a scary thing. Yeah, the idea of the skeleton's kind of spooky, I guess, but it's kind of a beautiful depiction, and it's kind of interesting to see. You know, there's imagery when you look her up, and you see how some people celebrate her and how some of her feasts and stuff. But like, people go out and they bless, you know, her dolls that children carry of her. They bless them in tequila and this and that. And it's a kind of a beautiful thing in a weird, morbid way. Because, again, death isn't necessarily an end to anything. It's just the beginning of something else.
Every new beginning comes from others. Some beginnings end, right?
Absolutely.
Closing time, Larry.
Closing time. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's where we get copyright stricken.
I didn't sing it, though, so we're good. But it makes sense in this context here.
Now, I'm Bob After Dark. I'm always one to try to give you guys ways to defeat your foe, right? Whenever I give you a situation.
Wait a second. You're going to tell us how to defeat death?
Yeah, fortunately, I don't have an answer for you.
Okay, I was going to say.
I don't think the trick
is... If you had an answer for this, people would be going crazy over this news.
I don't think the trick is to live forever, man. That's against the natural laws of life and the way things are.
Hmm.
Death is just an inevitability. However, there is an old adage that if you challenge death to something... and you beat death in challenge, you can prolong your sentence.
Really?
Yes. There's the famous, this is famous across the board. Lots of movies depict this. Seventh Seal is one of them. Death playing a game of chess even was in Bill and Ted, you know, death. But they played a lot of games in Bill and Ted with them. But there's the concept of somebody playing chess with the Grim Reaper, right? And I wanted to touch base on that too. So let's say you meet death and you know, you're not ready to go and you decide you're going to challenge death to something.
All right.
Now, the concept of death playing a game of chess, it actually comes back all the way to 1480. There is a painting at the Täby Church located in Stockholm, Sweden. And it's this beautiful stained painting of death literally playing a game of chess, and that's where we get the concept.
See, can I challenge him to checkers instead? I'm not a big chess guy.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't been able to meet death yet.
Do you have a choice? I mean, it's always chess. Can you?
I think it just depends on what mythos you're pulling from.
But I mean, if you ran into him, do you have an option like, hey, can we do this instead? Or are you playing on his terms and conditions?
It just depends on the mythos.
Just depends, okay.
I think the idea is just to play a game of chess with them. And
hopefully you know chess.
Yeah, that's actually true story. That's why I learned when I was younger.
Just in case.
Just in case the day would ever come when I would have to challenge death to a game of chess. I wanted to know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still practice to this day a little bit because I always want to be on my toes in case I ever have to play death in a game of chess.
Hmm.
The last thing I want to talk about is this idea that there is... what people see in a lot of ghostly sightings, right? It is often said that people see this figure at near-death encounters. There are a lot of near-death experiences recorded where people believe they actually see the skeleton or the skull or, you know, some sort of figure like that kind of looming over them. And people have called out and said they see it. Is it because that's what we're taught? Is that because we see this imagery on a day-to-day basis? That's the thing we see. It's kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel. People say they see that, and some people say they don't see it. I mean, is it just because that's what we're taught, and that's what we know, and that's what we understand? Or is there an actual figure looming out there that's just coming to reap your soul? You know, the Grim Reaper is not necessarily a scary entity. It's kind of inevitability. And I believe if more people understood that, I feel like there'd be...
I think it's the whole... What's the object he carries around again?
The scythe.
I think that's what scares people. Maybe if he didn't have that on him...
What would you want him to carry?
Maybe some cheese curds or something
A baguette?
Yeah, a baguette.
Death carries a baguette.
No, but like I think that's the image. Like, he's not there to lash out at you. He's just there to kind of guide you along, right?
Yeah. They're not necessarily bad things. They just,
but he could lose that. He could lose it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Count Panic, do you have any closing words for the audience tonight?
Yes. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
All right, folks, thank you so much for watching and listening another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of myself and Count, I wanted to tell you guys good night. To Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. And to Mom and Dad, I want to wish you good night as well. All right, folks, remember the two most important rules I could teach you on Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Till next time.
Memoriam Development.